Well, good morning and welcome to Saturday in the Studio. We get all the knobs and buttons turned correctly here, and we are here. We are live. Merle Kelch is off today, but we are joined by attorney Alan Haugum from the Haugum Law Firm here in Wausau to take your, I guess, financial questions about end-of-life issues, estate planning issues, and things like that. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tom. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and it felt a little bit like there was a slight disturbance in the force yesterday. August 1st was apparently one of those deadline dates for some of the things we've been talking about with you the last few times you've been on the program. And I guess talk about the reaction that folks are having to some of these rule changes that went into effect yesterday. And you said you got a whole lot of questions.
Oh, we've had a ton of questions, Tom, in the office, probably for the last several weeks, about people waiting for this August 1st deadline. Now, this is a Wisconsin law for everyone listening out there. If you are streaming us out of state, you can go back to bed and get some more breakfast, because this is Wisconsin only. But we have had a number of rule changes starting last June 30th of 2013. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services has issued some guidelines regarding the legislative changes, and it started last year with our legislature, and it's gone through seemingly every pocket of government that we have that can touch these things. But as of a couple of months ago, the Department of Health Services issued the final August 1st deadline for some of the changes that people were concerned about. And I thought today would be a good day to talk about that, just because we have finally gotten past this looming August 1st date. And it affects people probably who haven't done anything yet, or people who just wanted to do some of the shortcut type things with regard to protecting assets and long-term care and all of those sorts of things. So, Tom, if we have a few minutes today, we can talk about that. We can talk about any questions that people want to call in about. But that certainly seems to be on people's minds this week.
All right. What's the question you're being asked most often?
Well, I think, you know, we start with just the general question, what is this? And for anyone who hasn't heard the show the last few times we've talked about it, last June 30th and a series of dates since then, the state has made some moves to collect or to get their fingers around more of the assets that people have if they need long-term care, or if they need long-term care and they fall under Wisconsin's medical assistance program. There used to be different categories of assets that you could protect, so that if one spouse needed nursing home care and you didn't have enough to pay I think the state says it's about $7,600 per month of cost. In the central part of the state, it's a little bit higher, we find, but the state says it's about $7,600 a month. If you fall below certain limits, the state's medical assistance program helps you pay for that. In some cases, pays for all of that. And what the state has always said is they don't want to make a surviving spouse or a healthy spouse destitute. They don't want to wipe the couple out completely, at least not during your lifetime, because the healthy spouse needs a place to live, and they need a couple of assets to buy groceries and those kinds of things. But Wisconsin has made many moves to, reduce the amount that surviving spouse or that healthy spouse has available. And now they've made some additional provisions, and really what this August 1st program is about is that they can collect more of what you have even after you die. Because we had a lot of folks, Tom, who would say, well, we're just trying to protect the house. You know, that was always a popular one. I don't think you could go into a barber shop in the state, or a beauty shop probably for that matter, and not have someone say, what you need to do is just give the house to the kids. And we would have folks who would say, once you reach a certain age, it was almost standard protocol. Now, we didn't, clients of ours didn't, and I know some other attorneys held the same view, but we never thought it was a great idea for lots of reasons we've outlined on the show before, because it was just a bad tax idea. If you give the house to the kids and then you later do need nursing home care, and the kids say they want to sell it, they say, well, it costs money. Well, oftentimes the parents, because they were living there and because they wanted to continue living there, they kept what was called a life estate. And a life estate, just simply put, was the right that you keep to live in your house for the rest of your life, even though you gave it to the kids. And the state said there were all kinds of different things that they could get, and the math was not in your favor. So if you gave the house to the kids and you later needed nursing home care, the state could come back and say, if you sell the house while your parents are in the nursing home, the state or the nursing home is going to get a big chunk of it. Either through the taxes that you unwittingly stepped into, or just because that life estate, that right to live there, has a value. And the state could calculate it. They would put a percentage on it. So if you gave the house to the kids and the parents later needed nursing home care, the kids would say, you know what, a year into this, we have to pay $2,000 in property taxes or $3,000 in property taxes, or we have to heat this place. It's $50 a month to just to keep it at 60 degrees all year long. We have to pay for homeowners insurance, which gets more and more expensive when the house is vacant. We have to mow the lawn and plow the snow a lot of times just by city ordinances if you live in town. And this gets to be expensive, and you have to send someone over there once a week. I mean, it really did get to be, and some kids thought it was a burden. So they'd say, we're spending $2,000-$4,000 a year, and all the rest of the money is gone, remember. Well, what kids would do is they would sell the house, and the state says, well, you have to pay some taxes now because you're selling a house that you own but you don't live in, and there's all sorts of tax rules that you fall into unwittingly. But you also have to give to the nursing home or to the state the value of the life estate. And what we're talking about is if a parent gives a child the house, but the parent or the parents keep the right to live there, just by keeping the right to live there, that has a value. And the state would put an arbitrary number on it. And we found, shockingly enough, Tom, that the state kind of jimmied the figures so that that percentage that was supposedly the value of the life estate was bigger than actuaries or the IRS or other people would tell us it's really worth. And this, what it means is the state got more money. Mm-hmm. And you say, I know that's a surprise to everyone out there that the state would kind of doctor the numbers a little bit, and in a pretty big way. It wasn't just a little bit here and there. It was a big way. But whatever the result was, when you gave the house to the kids, kept the right to live there, if the kids sold it during your lifetime, you know, if we had someone who was in their 80s, it wasn't unusual for them to lose about half of the value of the house between taxes and the life estate, sometimes more. And you say, this is a house we're trying to protect. You know, we had a $100,000 house, we lost $50,000, or we had a $150,000 house, we lost $75,000, $80,000. So what some kids said, and where this ties into August 1st, is if kids were going to sell the house that the parents went to the nursing home, the kids wanted to sell the house just because they didn't want to pay $3,000-$4,000 a year anymore. They didn't want to go over there once a week to mow the lawn. They didn't want to, you know, pay somebody to plow the snow. What the kids would say is, we're going to sell the house. We would, you know, just take a look at that. And CPAs hopefully are doing this. Other attorneys are doing this. They take a look at the kids and say, you can sell it, but even if you get full price, you're going to lose half of this. You know, and sometimes you'd lose 40%. Sometimes you lose 50, 55, whatever it is. But you're going to lose a huge number of this house you thought you were going to protect. So if you had, you know, that house, you know, even I forget what the average house is, but they say it's a $130,000 house. You know, if you're going to lose 70 of that, the kids would look at each other and say, well, then we're not going to sell it. We're going to keep it. And it made sense. You know, it was one of those things where if you're going to lose that much, it just didn't make sense to sell it. You could struggle through with 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever it is more years of paying $4,000 a year rather than losing 60 or 70 at one time. Well, the state said, all right, if that's what you're going to do, if you're going to keep it, you're going to not sell it, not give us a big chunk of it, then we're going to change the rules. And as of August 1st, the state says for any new transactions like that, new life estates or people who now give houses to kids, the state can get that life estate money. They can get that percentage from the parents even after the parents die. And this is, it's kind of a watershed moment for us. And how they arrived there was a little bit of, it's legislative myth-making, I think. But what it really boils down to is the state says, if the kids then realize the math, and they realize that by selling a house while a parent's in a nursing home means they're going to lose, you know, close to half of it or half of it or more, and by doing, you know, or by potentially losing that much money, they're not going to sell it anymore. The state says, well, fine, you just hang on to it, and you keep mowing the lawn, and you keep plowing the snow, and you keep paying the property taxes, and if you wait to sell it until after the parent dies, then we're going to come back and we're going to get that value even after the parent dies, which they never did before. They couldn't, but now they can. And I think, Tom, what this means is, for better or worse, anyone who is thinking about giving a house to kids because they think they're quote-unquote protecting it, that
doesn't apply anymore.
That's just out. Yeah.
The whole idea of this is to raise enough money to cover the cost of this long-term nursing care for these folks and not take it out of general tax dollars. Do the numbers work that way?
No.
They don't.
No, and that's, no, there's less, I think we have less hard data on that because this is just going into effect now.
Yeah.
You know, it hasn't, it just went into effect yesterday. We don't know. But the, supposedly the bipartisan, or the not the bipartisan, but the nonpartisan, shall we say, folks that take a look at this, say that potentially the cost of collection could be greater than the actual proceeds collected.
Wait a minute.
So this, now this is, and this is one we haven't taken a look at. I have not followed that up, but I think it's one that we'll find out over the next probably year or two or five. But they talk about that some of the costs of finding these things out are great, that we have to find a new agency who's going to track these things. We have to find other people.
So we're taking money out of one pocket to try to get money into another pocket, and it's coming out to less than a wash?
It can be.
That
yeah.
doesn't make any sense at all.
And it is. It's you know, what ends up happening is the state says, we're going to collect more money from parents and families. And whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, you know, that's one thing we don't offer an opinion on. I think this is more about an educational type show. But regardless, more of the dollars that people thought were protected are not. So we have to track that. You can't just perform these transactions and nobody knows about it. So we have to have other people who track this, and we add that to an agency. And if, you know, we've taken a look at state agencies and state budgets, particularly in the last 6-7 years, since, you know, 08, when we had the Great Recession and ongoing, and the budgets have been slashed, and we've had jobs slashed in state government. So we have fewer people doing the same amount of work, and now we're saying, you know what, we're going to add an entirely new layer of reporting and collecting and all these sorts of things. So it can be tough.
How will they be able to justify this, though, if it's not doing what it was intended to do, and that's raise the money to pay for people's nursing home care so the state doesn't have to take it out of general tax funds? If it's actually costing more money to collect it than it's raising, the law makes no sense whatsoever.
I think it's hard to find that. I think it in the end is hard to detail exactly how much it costs to monitor and collect. Is probably
we'll know
answer.
More in a year or two when the costs shake out.
Now, what happens is, and for just for the details here so we don't skip on those, this is only for new transfers of property that happened as of August 1st going forward. So if you gave the house to the kids 10 years ago and you're sitting there saying, oh, my gosh, we thought we complied with the law and we got this new bombshell, there was a little bit of hand-wringing, and they had some last-minute changes to basically exempt you. Those people, I think we had a show probably 6 months ago where we talked about that those people were included. Well, that was changed. So they had a last-minute change. Well, last-minute meaning in the last couple months. Mm-hmm. But what they had told us for a year was that every life estate that was ever created for anyone who's still living was included, and that's not the case. So this is only for new transfers to kids that as of August 1st, 2014. So if anyone has the house now and has been thinking about giving it to the kids and doing one of these things, I would say really effectively that should not happen anymore. Now, if someone has a reason for it, if someone out there says, oh, no, we're giving it to the kids, and the only reason we're doing it is because we want to protect half of it or we want to protect 60% of it. Well, okay. Well, maybe then you're going into it with your eyes wide open. But there are many more effective, cost-effective ways to do that. But so Tom, I think to answer that is you have to have a transaction that happens now.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have someone who later needs long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that passes away and the kids haven't sold it. I mean, you have a number of things that have to happen. And I think there's probably going to be a 5-year lag on this. Just because if you give the house away now, we still have those 5-year rules that say you gave the house to the kids, you have to be healthy and not need nursing home care for 5 years just to get past that gift before we're concerned about the life estate. So I think realistically, we probably have about a 5-year dead period here where there isn't going to be any results, or we're not going to know anything about how much it costs or how much it doesn't or anything else. But just from the folks who spend more time analyzing the data than we do, we're doing the legal work, but some folks are, you know, taking a look at how much government spends, and you have all those watchdog kind of programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are the people who tell us that this will be pretty expensive to monitor eventually. So we'll see.
All right, 715-845-2155. If you have a question for Alan, give us a call here this morning. We're talking about estate planning and things like that, but any real end-of-life financial question could be tackled here today. Give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Summer is here, and nothing looks better than tan skin and white teeth. And if you want to have whiter teeth in 5 minutes, then try clinically proven Power Swabs. Power Swabs whitens teeth on average 2 shades in 5 minutes and 6 shades in 7 days. Call to whiten your teeth in 5 minutes, risk-free. 1-800-663-1502. That's 1-800-663-1502. 1-800-663-1502.
Today, my new dad threw a barbecue.
I burnt everything.
And then we played catch.
I broke Mr. Lewis's window. And then, somehow, my hand.
My hand! And then my dad even let me drive his car.
The hospital's on the right!
It was a rough day.
It was a great day.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of kids in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Tanning, indoors or out, increases your risk of skin cancer, including melanoma, the second most common cancer in young adults and the leading cause of cancer death in women 25 to 30.
Tanning doesn't make me look healthier. My ambition does.
Tanning doesn't make me stand out. My drive does.
Tanning can cause wrinkles, age spots, and even melanoma, the cancer that kills one person every hour. And using tanning beds significantly increases your risk of developing melanoma.
Tanning doesn't make me glow. My individuality does.
Tanning doesn't make me feel better about myself.
I got the job.
Yeah.
My confidence does.
Tanning doesn't make you more beautiful. It only makes you more at risk. Stop tanning. Learn more at spotskincancer.org. A message from the American Academy of Dermatology.
Work smarter, not harder. We've all heard it, but how do you do it? It's not about prioritizing or organizing. It's about listening to the radio.
Now we've got to get smarter.
We'll make you smarter with news updates at the top and bottom of every hour throughout the workday.
There is a smarter way to do this.
And when you're glued to the radio, you won't be able to work hard at all. So you see, work smarter, not harder. WSAU.
Tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with attorney Alan Haugum from the Haugum Law Firm here in Wausau. Phone lines are open, 715-845-2155. We don't want to open it up to any legal question, although we can, because as we've said before, what do you call someone who knows a little bit about everything in the law? A lawyer, right? You went
Absolutely.
To law school and you had to learn everything, right?
We do. You know, and we do. It matters for our show, but you do get a general degree. You can practice any type of law, and you don't need separate practice area requirements other than things like patents. That's about it. So if you want to patent a product this morning on the air, we cannot help you with that. But anything else,
but
we can.
If you're going to specialize like you do in estate planning and end-of-life issues, continuing education is probably the way that gets done, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We spend, I think I spend 3 weeks a year, every year, just on the continuing education for that new year's information. Now, you don't have to spend that much. We do a little bit more than we have to, just because we want to have just every angle covered and every question answered and everything. So we spend about 3 weeks out of a year, which seems like, I mean, that's three quarters of a month of just
Just well, considering how many rule changes are right. thrown in every year and the thickness of the rule books, that you do talk about the thickness of the rule books sometimes for some of this stuff.
It is. Yeah, when we used to, we don't even print it out anymore, but the last time we printed it out, it was about as wide as I can spread my thumb and index finger. If you spread those apart, that's about how wide the rule book is, just for the Wisconsin rules. So if someone says, I don't understand this, or someone says, my lawyer didn't know about that one, we say, well, that's okay. That they don't specialize in it. The other thing I tell people is if you've been injured in an auto accident, I don't know what to do. I don't do that. I know who's good at it, and we can help you find those people. Or if someone is in a divorce or a bankruptcy or a criminal matter, don't do any of those things. We know who's good at it, but we don't do it. We couldn't. We couldn't be specialized in everything, so we do this.
Why does it seem like those lawyers that specialize in that advertise a lot? And other lawyers that are in other forms of the law don't advertise. Is it just like an unwritten rule that it's okay for some lawyers to advertise but not others?
Well, we used to have a rule, and don't quote me on the years here. I don't recall exactly, but before I practiced, I don't know if it was the 70s, 80s, 90s, maybe 70s and 80s, there was a rule, actually an ethical rule against advertising. That said, lawyers could not advertise. You had to just wait until people called you. You could tell people what your phone number is, but you couldn't have a splashy ad or the billboards or all these kinds of things. And they removed that, and they said it was no longer unethical to advertise. In fact, lawyers could advertise just like anyone else. And that's where we see a lot of, for example, the personal injury lawyers that say, you know, been injured in an accident, and they have billboards and TV ads, some entertaining TV ads, some, you know, yellow pages. You know, if you look in the phone book, the biggest ads are generally personal injury lawyers, at least the ones we see. We don't, just because I think a lot of the people who need the types of services that we provide don't look to the yellow pages because it's more of something that it almost happens slowly or organically over time. If you've been injured in an accident that morning, you know, someone pulls out the book and says, where do we start looking? Mm-hmm. And they pull out the yellow pages. If you need an estate planner, you say, you know what, it's time we got a will. We really need to do this because we're 40 or we're 45 or we have two kids. Or there's, you know, as you get closer to retirement or it's, you know, long-term care issues. People don't have one major event. So I think that's where the advertising, I think, is geared at people who have that event. And then they look to, you know, where can we find it?
Or the TV and radio ads build brand awareness like all advertising does.
Yeah,
and so
I think
the first time you need something, you think about, well, I saw this or I heard this.
It's the person with the catchy phone number. Whereas I think what we do, it's more of a lot of the clients who come to see us say, you know what, we heard you from my brother-in-law came to see you and said good things. Or then I went and I was talking to someone in you know, this hospital waiting room, and they were talking about you or in whatever it is. And that's the third time I've heard your name. And you know what? It's about time we got this done. So they call.
That's the opposite of when I talked to Merle about, you know, word of mouth, hearing about investments from your brother-in-law or the bus driver or somebody right. in the sauna at the Y. It's probably not a good idea to put a whole lot of stock in those kind of tips.
I think that's tougher. Usually they say once the, you know, what is the classic one? Once the cab driver tells you what to invest in, that's when you know you start to invest in something different.
Yeah, all right. All right, let's take a call in here before the news.
Okay.
Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Good morning. This is Jenny.
Hi, Jenny. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning. I have a question in regards to healthcare power of attorney.
Sure.
In talking to an attorney recently, they said that really the only form that a hospital will recognize is the state of Wisconsin healthcare power of attorney. And what we currently have enacted is a protective power of attorney for healthcare. And we got that from the Pro-Life Wisconsin website where we could print it off. Is the one from the Pro-Life Wisconsin valid? Will our hospitals recognize that?
Well, Ginny, your attorney, and I won't quote directly, but your attorney, I think, is mostly right, and I think what they were trying to tell you was right, but with a caveat. What Ginny's talking about for folks out there is there's something called a power of attorney for healthcare, which describes the person who you give the legal authority to make your healthcare decisions. You don't say, I want this if I have a feeding tube, or this if I have an end-of-life decision, or this. You don't answer the questions. You just say, my spouse first, and if my spouse can't, it's my adult child or my brother or my parent. That's the person who can sign for me for any medical decision. Now, What Wisconsin has is something called a power of attorney for healthcare that is a standard form. There's actually two versions of the form. One you can get free at the clinic, or any hospital has a copy of it. There's another one that lawyers have that it's less of a fill in the blanks because we just draft it. But it's the same language. They haven't changed a word of that, to my knowledge, since 1998. So, Jenny, what happens is every doctor is trained on that. Every hospital's seen it. Every clinic has seen it. It's the exact same language. And if you fill out the Wisconsin form, that your doctor literally will look at it. They will look at it, see who the agents are, see the boxes that are checked, see that it's signed and witnessed correctly, and they might be comfortable with that form in a minute, in 45 seconds. They'll look at it and say, yep, everything's here. We're ready to go, and they will use it. If you give them any other form, it doesn't mean it's not legal. It's legal, but the doctor hasn't seen it 1,000 times like they've seen the standard form. So you can have Pro-Life Wisconsin, and I haven't seen the Pro-Life Wisconsin form, so they might just be using the same language and putting a different label on it. That's possible, and we can take a look at that maybe and talk about
it. It's more the layman's language than it is the legal language.
Well,
it gives our beliefs a little bit more.
Yeah.
For what we would wish.
And there are several organizations that do that. Some religious organizations do that. Some different social organizations do that, where they say, we want to make this easier to understand for the layperson. But what happens is when you give that to a doctor, any language that is different than the Wisconsin form, and again, there's two Wisconsin forms. There's the clinic version and the lawyer version, but they're the same thing. They just look a little different. But if it's different than the Wisconsin form, your doctor really can look at that and say, whoa, wait a minute. I haven't seen this version 1,000 times like I've seen the other one. So I can't give you the go-ahead on this. I'm going to have to send it to the hospital legal department. And if they send it to the hospital legal department, that might take a week or two or three, literally weeks, where the legal department says, wait a minute, I think this makes sense. I think this is beautiful prose. And what you have, Jenny, might be, how would we say, even finer use of the English language or all those to make it easier to understand for a layperson, or it might hold your beliefs in reality much more securely than the standard version. But the trade-off is that your doctor hasn't seen that nearly as much.
It's going to take a lot longer to
cause a delay. So I think what the lawyer is trying to tell you is more just kind of pragmatic advice, but in reality that the closer
it'll eventually
the form,
turn out to be legal, probably, but if you need it quickly, it's not going to happen.
I think the biggest thing, Tom, is what we always recommend to people is fill out, or we'll do it. We do it for our clients for free. You get it anywhere for free. Fill out the standard Wisconsin version, and then grab your agents and let them know very specifically what your social or religious beliefs or those real core values of yours are. And even write those in a separate letter to your agents, but incorporate that into the Wisconsin form, and you'll probably get it done faster.
All right, thanks for the call, Jenny. Appreciate it. We're running way late. We need to do some news here. We'll come back with more. We're talking to Attorney Alan Haugum today on the program. Give us a call if you have a question, 715-845-2155. We'll be right back.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9. WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. Doctors in Atlanta are preparing for the arrival of two Americans infected with the Ebola virus. The first of those patients is expected to arrive today. They'll be treated at Emory University Hospital in Atlanta, which has a special isolation unit not far from CDC headquarters. A bill providing $225 million to rearm Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system is on its way to the White House for the president's signature. The House passed the bill Friday by a 395-8 vote a few hours after the Senate passed it unanimously. Investigators are trying to determine what sparked a deadly explosion at a factory in eastern China. Saturday's blast killed at least 65 people and injured more than 100 others. One of the five family members from Mozambique accused of supplying the heroin that nearly killed a woman claims he's not guilty. 25-year-old Jacob Gould made the plea in court yesterday. His attorney also indicated he'll be requesting a new judge in the case. He remains in the Marathon County Jail, unable to post a $25,000 cash bond. The trial is over for the woman accused of failing to care for five horses. 72-year-old Barbara Theory of Clintonville was charged with 15 misdemeanors. The court threw out two of the charges. The Waupaca County jury got the case and delivered a verdict Friday morning. They found Theory not guilty on all of the charges except one. The Brewers beat the Cardinals last night. They're back in action tonight. You can hear the game right here. Pre-game show at 5:40. The Woodchucks got a win over Lakeshore. They host Kenosha in a game tonight at Athletic Park. The weather forecast today, a chance of a few showers and storms and a high of 79. Partly cloudy tonight, low down to 56. Cloudy tomorrow with a chance of showers and storms again, a high of 77. For Monday, showers and storms possible, especially to the south, high 76. Partly cloudy on Tuesday, chance of showers, high 76. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News Station, WSAU.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
This is a test to find out if you know it all when it comes to children. Name one of the leading killers of U.S. children age 1 to 13. What's the best way to protect children in a car crash? At what age and size should a child start using a booster seat?
Don't assume you know it all when it comes to car seats for your child. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat and know for sure. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The office. The dreary, empty, soul-crushing office. At least there's one thing you could do to brighten your day. Check in 3 or 4 times for a quick news update, some entertaining talk, or just hear some insight and opinions on what's going on in the world.
It made me really down today, but when I put on the radio and I heard you talking about it, it really raised my spirit.
Online or on air. WSAU and WSAU.com.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Alan Haugum, Haugum Law Firm in Wausau. Your office is not soul-crushing, is it?
No, it's a pretty fun office, actually. You know what we put in, Tom? Just this week, not kidding, we are baking homemade chocolate chip cookies fresh every morning the office.
Just like the car dealers when you're waiting for your oil change.
I got talked into this. I lost this vote in my office to my my team, but they said, let's try it. Sounds like fun. And gosh, the office smells great. So stop in for a cookie, even if you don't have an appointment.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Hi, this is Sandy Cockle.
Hi, Sandy. You're on with Alan. Go ahead.
Morning, Sandy.
I got a question regarding the new law effective August 1st. If we had turned our lake property over to family members, not daughters or sons, will that be affected? Or because we did it before August 1st, we will be okay?
One question, Sandy, when you transferred it, did you just transfer it to them completely and totally? Or did you keep the right to live there or to use it? Did you keep a life estate or something like that while you're living?
It's upon our death.
Oh, like a transfer on death deed?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, the transfer on death deed is a little bit different because you can change that. So you are probably, the caveat is we never say anything without actually looking at the documents. So this
correct.
Is one, if I had a copy of the documents in front of me, I could tell you absolutely with absolute certainty. But there's something in a state called a transfer on death deed that just says, I'm going to keep my house for the rest of my lifetime. But just to avoid a couple of the rounds of paperwork, maybe the probate court, which we've talked about quite a bit in past years, I just want to help my family with some of the administrative cost and the time after I die. So upon my death, it will transfer directly to whomever.
Okay.
That is not what we're talking about today.
Okay,
now,
great.
I have good news and bad news for you. The good news is that is not affected by the life estate changes in the August 1st rule. So that's the good news. The bad news is those are generally not protected from long-term care or nursing home costs in general. So, and I want to make sure that we're not talking about two different things, that what you did is exactly what I think you're describing. But there is something in Wisconsin that's just called a transfer on death deed. It says it's your house forever. It's your house 100%. But upon your death, it goes to this person unless you change it. Now, 2 years from now, you could say, oh, you know what? I think I'm going to give it to a different person or more people or fewer people. So the good news is it's not affected by that Wisconsin August 1st life estate rule change. But the bad news is that's those types of TOD or transfer on death deeds are not protected or not protecting anything from nursing home care. That's not the intent, actually.
Okay.
So
if we had to go to the nursing home, and it would still continue to go to them, right?
Even
if our money was exhausted, for instance.
If it's, and this is where I would let's talk about this just generally, and not with regard to your property, because again, I want to be careful about describing your property without looking at the actual deed.
Okay.
But what happens is, if you give property to another person, lake property or your home or any other kind of asset, you give it to another person, and more than 5 years later, we still have the five-year rule that we've talked about in the past, but if you're healthy for five more years and you need nursing home care at some point past that five-year date, then the property you gave to the other people is protected. You might keep a life estate on it and all those things, and it will affect how much the state can get, but some portion of it is protected, even past August 1st.
Okay.
If you said, no, we just have what's called a TOD or a transfer on death deed, what that means is the people who come after you will avoid probate, so that after you die, it's about two steps easier and a couple of bucks cheaper to transfer that lake property into their name so that they can start using it and paying the property taxes after your death. But the straight standard transfer on death deed does not affect or does not protect you from any nursing home expense.
Okay.
And it's not meant to. So that's one where maybe grab those papers and take a look at them. You know, you can take a look at them with your attorney. If your attorney doesn't do that anymore, or your attorney's retired, or you needed an extra opinion, give me a call. But I would say just to be sure you have what you think you have.
Okay.
So
I appreciate that.
Oh,
all right.
You're welcome.
Thanks
Sandy.
For the call. Appreciate
morning.
It. 715-845-2155 is the number to call here. This August 1st date, you mentioned that it was a state law that state rules that are being dealt with here. Anything changing on the federal level when it comes to this stuff?
No, the federal government really says there are certain things you can do. There are certain things that you can do to protect assets, and other than that, the state can do whatever they want. Is really how the and obviously they don't write it in that language, but they say here are the protected measures. You have to allow certain things. For example, the state in doing this has described certain irrevocable trusts. Now we talk about revocable trusts. We talk about life estates, talk about giving things, and but the state explicitly exempted irrevocable trusts. They say if you have an irrevocable trust, that's fine. You could do that before August 1st. You can do it after August 1st. You're fine. So a lot of that planning works out great. It's in fact, it's statutory now. It's something that always worked, but now it's a little bit easier to even point to the statute number. So the federal government is a little bit of the protector of the big program that says here's what you have to allow people to do. But beyond that, a state can be as lenient or as strict as they want. So there's a huge guideline or a huge range. And Wisconsin, with these rules, is just ratcheting it up to be just about as strict as you can get. Now, there are different areas and there are different shades of gray, but in this area, this literally, I think, is as strict as any state could be. In fact, to my knowledge, we're the first one to go this far in a number of areas. For example, that life estate. If we have someone who transfers the house to the kids, keeps the life estate, and then needs nursing home care, the state will put a lien on the life estate. And you say, wait a minute, can you put an actual lien, a monetary lien on a life estate? And Wisconsin says, yes, you can, after August 1st. So a number of these things we've never had before that we are now dipping our toe into.
All right, let's go back to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Kate.
Hey, Kate, go ahead. You're on with Alan.
Hi, Kate.
Good morning. Are your IRAs protected from nursing home care. Say my husband has to go to a nursing home. We
yes.
both have IRAs, and I know they can strip almost everything away, but can they take my IRA away?
You have a very good question, Kate, and in some cases this is one of the most important things we deal with. So I'll try to say this and enunciate this clearly. There are a number of rules with regard to IRAs in Wisconsin, and if you think about it, people always would say, oh, the house is the biggest asset we have, and that's what we want to protect. And that still holds true for a lot of families, but in a lot of others, the IRAs, the retirement accounts, are even bigger yet. So, Kate, let's say that you and your husband both have $100,000 IRAs, and you have other things. You've got a house, you've got a couple dollars in the checking account, but you each have $100,000 of IRAs. If your husband needs nursing home care, what the state says is you can keep your IRA exempt, but the state is going to want his. Now, there are some legal things you can do, and there is some, so for anyone out there, if you're in that situation, I would say call, because there's some things you can do to delay the state receiving your husband's, or you can keep some portion of your husband's. There are a number of things you can do, but Kate, you can keep your IRA exempt, which sounds fantastic, except Kate, do you know who the beneficiary on your IRA is if you die? Right now, do you know?
Yes, I do.
Who would that be?
My spouse.
Oh, well, Kate, that's a horrible idea because your husband is in a nursing home. Now, not your husband, Kate, but we say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek. You're naming your spouse as the beneficiary. He's the one in the nursing home. So this $100,000 exempt asset that you did everything right with, if you die, snapping your fingers, that $100,000 goes to the state, and it is like a cloud of dust, gone. And you go, wait a minute. I thought we protected it. I thought we figured it out. So what you need to do, Kate, is really draft the landing spot. Draft, and I don't mean giving it right to the kids, but I mean draft something that says if you die, you get to keep what that exempt asset was still protected. Can you draft a trust? Can you draft an irrevocable trust? Can you draft something that says you get to keep it in the family? And your husband all of a sudden raises his hand. He's listening on the radio in the other room, and he says, wait a minute, Kate. I'm not in a nursing home yet. I don't know if you noticed this yet. So you can't go giving that IRA to someone else or some other trust. Well, what you can do is give it to a trust for your husband's benefit or do something with it to keep it that doesn't expose it to that instant loss to a nursing home. So you have actually a pretty multifaceted question, Kate. And really what happens is sometimes it makes a difference on who has a bigger IRA. But you have to get those beneficiary designations set up correctly. Because otherwise, just take a look at the number on your IRA, and what you think is exempt is immediately gone. So that's a big deal. It's a great question. We probably should spend, someday, we don't have enough time before the end of the show, but someday we might spend like a whole segment or a whole first half of the show just talking about IRAs. So.
All right, appreciate the call. Thanks very
Thank
much.
Thank you very
715-845-2155. Right back to the phone we go. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Gene.
Hey, Gene, go ahead. You're on with Alan.
Morning, Gene.
Morning, Al. I have a business it's empty right now, but I want to turn it into five little shops. Can an individual person form an LLC, or what's my first step in order to protect the my estate right now and keep it separate from that business that I want to establish? I want to rent out those five shops.
Sure. Yeah, and what you can do, Gene, I think the first step is, and this is, everyone's a little bit different. It depends on what kind of shops and depends on who's going to be moving into the shops. If it's five businesses you and your wife are going to own separately, that's a little bit different than if it's five people outside of your family or outside of your tax return. Yeah.
This would be outside of the family.
What I would do first is, and it sounds a little tongue-in-cheek, but get a good business attorney, get a good real estate attorney, someone who does this. There are people here in town that do this frequently. They do this every week. This is their entire practice. Get a good CPA if you don't have one. And for both of those, if you need some recommendations, give me a call off the air and I'll help you with that. But there are some people who do that, and there is almost a formula for doing this. I think the first thing would be you get an LLC, certainly. Don't do this in your own name. We would not recommend that. Get an LLC. You could do it in a corporation, but an LLC, in my opinion, is a little bit easier, a little bit less expensive, a little bit easier to deal with. But you do, and you just separate that business from your personal assets for liability purposes. So that way, the business is the business. And if one of those people in the shops does something wrong, or they don't shovel the sidewalk, or they, you know, leave water on the floor, and we have someone who slips and falls and hits their head, yes, they can sue that business. Maybe they can sue you because you're the owner of the building. But we don't want them to be able to sue you for your personal assets. We want to keep those protected. You know, and we talk about asset protection for long-term care and medical issues all the time. But even before that, just for business purposes, you want to keep your business potential liability separate from your personal assets and your house and your savings and your retirement. So, yeah, I think LLC is the first step, but I also think you need a good CPA, you need a good attorney, and have someone who does this type of work. Just like we do estate planning and elder law, you know, there are people who do this, so they specialize in this, you know, almost exclusively. So,
okay, what you'd be doing then is recommending another attorney. You'd prefer not to do it yourself because you are my attorney.
For this, you know, it's a type of thing where we would probably grab someone who says they're going to be doing the specialized type of real estate work. You know, this is something that we know how to do, but there are other people who probably do this more than we do. You know, we're doing more of the asset protection and more of the estate planning. So we would say, you know, maybe we'll do the broad general strokes, but we say if you want to get into something really highly specific, sometimes it's franchise agreements, sometimes all of those kinds of things.
Like specialty medicine, I suppose,
exactly.
When you're using a specialist for a certain
thing. Yeah, we'll get into that. So, Gene, just give me a call to the office, and we'll walk you through it. Or we'll just stop in and we'll set up an appointment, and we'll come talk about it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 715-845-2155. We've got a few minutes left. If you have a question for Alan, give us a call. We'll be back after this on WSAU.
America was built by people with a few dollars and a dream. And while many don't know it, there's one path to success that still only requires a dream and about $10. That's right. If your dream is to start or grow your business, something as simple as the right business card could make all the difference. And today, at Vistaprint.com, you can get 500 full-color business cards for only $9.99. That's right, only $9.99. Just go to Vistaprint.com and enter promo code 1919 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 1919.
All of us want to make a difference. As veterans, we committed to protect our country. We served and sacrificed for the things that mattered most. Those experiences shaped our lives. Now we're husbands, wives, parents, and friends. And sometimes we forget that the biggest challenge can be asking for support. The Veterans Crisis Line is here for veterans. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. It matters.
A boy born in Joplin, Missouri was fascinated by anything with wheels and a motor. The odds of him going on to fascinate millions with his talent? 1 in 260,000. The odds of this born racer having 157 career top 10 finishes in NASCAR? 1 in 125 billion. But every driver seeks the pinnacle of their achievements. The odds of him winning both the Daytona 500 and the Brickyard 400 in the same year? 1 in 195 million. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I'm NASCAR driver Jamie McMurray, and my niece has autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Oh, man, I don't think I can take this music much longer.
Hey, look, up in the air.
It's news.
It's information.
Oh, wow, it's Captain Conversation.
Greetings, my little cubicle drones. What you need is a steady supply of news and talk. Here, how's this?
Rescuing you from dull music radio.
News Talk WSAU.
All right.
Far out.
Thanks, Captain Conversation.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King, along with, I almost said Merle Kelch, but he's not here. It's Alan Haugum. You look much different than Merle.
I was going to say, it's also Merle.
715-845-2155. We've got a few minutes left if you have a question for Alan this morning. And I see we do have a question coming in, so let's go back to the phone. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Good morning, Tom. My name is Bill.
Hey, Bill, you're on with Alan. Go ahead.
Morning, Bill.
Good morning, Al. I have a question regarding failure of property and ownership of my house to an S corporation,
okay,
which is owned by my children. Now, I was told by a CPA several years ago that the day that this would occur, I'm protected against any nursing home or state that would bring charges or want to acquire my properties.
Well, that is, I would say that is mostly not the best information in that. And if someone says they want to get just hyper-technical, Bill, and I don't think this is happening, but if someone says on the actual CPA exam, does that protect your house from the state actually coming in and taking your house? You bet. The state cannot take your house if it's transferred to an S-Corp or any other thing that's owned by your children. What the state can do is they say, we're just not going to give you any medical care. And we have clients where this happens. If you need nursing home care, Bill, one of the first, basically the first question on intake or before intake, before you're admitted now, is we've had clients ask, how many assets do you have? And you say, none. I don't have anything. I gave it away 2 days ago or 6 weeks ago or 2 years ago. And the next question is, well, yes, you did, but because you gave it away within the last 5 years, and by the way, there's no hiding this. The state knows you did. You have a Social Security number, so they track all these things. They say you gave the house away to an S-Corp owned by your kids, so you can't come in. You can't have any medical care here. We're just not going to admit you because you gave that property away, and that property was supposed to be used to pay for your care. And if you say, well, hey, my CPA told me that the state can't take the house, the nursing home's going to agree with you. They're going to say, yeah, we can't take the house. We can't just confiscate it. Now, there was a provision in that bill last year where that was a possibility that we thankfully got rid of. But they say we can't confiscate the house. Your CPA is correct, but can they deny you care? Yes. And in the end, does it matter to you? What's the bigger problem? They're going to financially or economically coerce your children into giving it back. And that's really where the state has the hammer. So.
All right, thanks for the call. We're out of time here. I mean, what happens to a person like that if the nursing home says we're not taking you? Where do they go?
They get discharged, and basically now I haven't heard of a lot of games of chicken where the state the nursing home says, oh, you have to leave. And there's some rules about they literally can't wheel you out into the street and leave you, which apparently in like L.A. people had done that, which
really?
Is insane. But they can't. They have to discharge you to something, but it really just becomes you're giving it to a family member, and it says you have to take them home, and that's it. And you have to take them to a place where they can't get care, and probably the state takes over.
All right, we're out of time for today. It went fast today. Good show, lots of good questions. If folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
I would say the best ways are our website, HougumLaw.com, 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 or call us at 715-843-5001, 843-5001.
All right, we'll talk to you again down the road.
Thanks, Tom.
We got the news on the way. The polka show is coming up as well, and then Brewer baseball tonight, 5:40 pregame as the Brewers take on the Cardinals once again here on WSAU.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.
Fox News Radio, I'm Ron Flatter. After another night of fighting during what was supposed to be the first day of a humanitarian ceasefire, there are signs the violence may be letting up between Israel and Hamas, at least with Palestinian targets in Gaza.
The Israeli Defense Forces have told people who live in the Beit Lahia area, which is just up towards the border, that it's safe for them to go back to their homes, but they should be wary of Hamas booby traps and unexploded ordnance. The Israelis believe that whatever they had to do up there, they have finished. They have succeeded militarily knocking out rocket launch sites and these tunnels.
Sky News reporter David Bowden in Gaza, where Palestinian officials say 35 people died overnight in air attacks and shellings by Israel. A plane carrying one of the two Americans, Dr. Kent Brantley, infected in West Africa with the...